Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, this is Travis Johnson, the Nonprofit Architect, coming to you pre-recorded from my apartment here in Bahrain. I'm on the day with Angie Francesco, one of the leaders at Squam Lakes Association. Angie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Travis. It's a lovely day here in central New Hampshire.
It is like nighttime over here in Bahrain, and it's still like 90 degrees outside, and Ramadan's in full swing. Everyone was out walking right before sunset, right before the cannon goes off, because once the cannon goes off, then they get to eat and be with family and have water that they've been depriving themselves of all day. Angie, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little something about Squam Lakes Association and what it is that you do?
Sure. So the Squam Lakes Association is a watershed organization, which means we protect the lakes and mountains surrounding the lakes. You may know Squam Lake from a movie that is now 40 years old called On Golden Pond. And so most people have seen or heard of Squam in some capacity. And the Squam Lakes Association has been in existence since 1904, when the lake wasn't so pristine as it is now. And the association gathered together a bunch of folks and started cleaning up the lake. And then we gained our IRS nonprofit status pretty much the first year that that was in existence, 1955-ish, 56. And we've been running a summer camp on the lake, a day camp since right around then as well. And I am the director of development at the SLA.
Sounds like a pretty sweet gig, and just being central New Hampshire on the lake all day, talk about the beautiful lake, and people are just open their wallets and just throwing money at you. I know you're a professional fundraiser. You've been doing it for like 30 some years.
I did my first fundraising thing when I was 9 years old. It was peer to peer. It was fundraising for one of the local parks in town. And there was back when we had bike-a-thons, when you would pester your family and say, hey, for every mile I ride, will you give me 10 cents or a dollar or $5? And I raised more money than anybody else for that park. And as a reward, I won a bike. And suddenly I decided that fundraising was not only fun and entertaining, but I could profit from it in some way.
So they hooked you at 9 with a free bike. How many miles did you end up riding in that bike-a-thon?
That one, it was really just a loop that was about a 20-mile loop. It wasn't anything crazy.
Which you get the most people committed for a dime or two, and you were off and running?
$326 later.
Dang, Angie, that's a lot of money back then.
Yeah, for a 9-year-old to have folks telling her that they were going to give her 10 cents a mile.
So most people gave you $2, so you got like 150 some people on board. That's crazy.
I did have help from my grandfather, who I think gave me $2 a mile. So there was my top donor right there.
$2. Here's $40. Good luck, Angie. Get out of here. But your grandfather is like a pillar of the community, right? Everyone ended up working summer jobs for him, if you were telling me correctly, right?
Different grandfather, but yes. Mm. My whole family is from here for over 100 years. So yes, the Squam Lakes Association that I work for and Squam has been something that's been a part of my family. My daughter is the fifth generation now to be a part of it. So we're pretty well entrenched in the local community. And I think that that's one of the things that makes this position and makes me really well suited, because it's really hard to walk into a community and be a fundraiser when you don't know anyone. I think it's easier if you're already a part of that community and you know people. My executive director has been here for about 10 years. And every time the phone rings or every time we're talking about anybody, I say, oh, no, I know. I played softball with their kid. Or, oh, you know, I actually went to our summer camp with their kid or something like that. There's always a connection. Or, oh, yeah, no, I know this guy. He towed my dad in when his boat broke last year.
So what does your executive director, who's only been around for 10 years, think about it? Like, initially, was he like, really, you know every single person that calls?
He knew that I would be a good fit because I knew a lot of people. He didn't realize how many people I knew, or same thing, how many people knew my family. And it was at one of our meetings last year. We had our big annual event in August, and about five people had come up to talk to me and said, oh, I worked for your grandfather. And, oh, I know your car because I see you every other Friday on your way to Vermont. And I'm the one with this license plate. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I know exactly who you are.
Playing license plate games, that's great. We talked about events, and we talked about events before the show started. That it's not that you hate events, but that they shouldn't really, you don't really use them for fundraising. Is that right?
No, it's been one of my philosophies as I have grown as a fundraiser and learned enough that events are not the thing or the cornerstone that should be holding up your fundraising plan for your nonprofit. But unless you can have an event that somehow will net six figures, I generally don't think it's worth the time investment and all of the effort that goes through it. If you're doing your event because it's mission-centric or because you're trying to make people in the community aware of who you are and what you do, I think that makes sense. But to use it as a fundraising tool, I don't like to do them because I think that they just take so much time and effort for everyone involved. It's always like pulling teeth. There's always a board member whose only job wants them. They want to have the job of picking out the color of the napkins at a dinner. or some board member says, let's save money on this event. Let's see if we can get someone to donate porta potties. I have spent more than 8 hours in a meeting with eight people who are being paid to be there, having a board member talk about getting porta potties donated for an event. I find that a giant waste of time. And so I don't like to use events as a primary fundraiser. If there's an opportunity and you have time and you have a fundraiser on staff, if you have someone who's in development, their time, and maybe with some board members, is probably better used on some major gift cultivation and major gift asks, because several events that I have been a part of have netted the organization $20,000. I have five major donors that I can think of right now that if I said, can I talk to you about increasing your gift? I could get all five of them to give me an extra $5,000 pretty quickly and not have to spend time doing that event.
Yeah, events are they can be such a drag. I mean, if you want to have fun at your event, don't ask for money.
Oh, absolutely. If you just want a friend-raiser, if you're looking for something to do that's going to make some fun, have some fun in the community, get your name out there, and it's an awareness part, then absolutely do an event, produce that event. Just know that if you can get your costs covered for the event, you're doing pretty well, depending on what it is.
I'm sure you didn't coin the term friendraiser, but I think that's the first time I've heard it. I really like that. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to give you credit for it from here till the end of time.
I am 100% not the person to give credit for coining the phrase friendraiser.
Fundraisers over fundraisers.
Yes, but that's the primary reason to do an event, as far as I'm concerned. Again, unless you live in a market that maybe you can get sponsors who are going to give you $50,000, or you can do something with $1,000 per person registry.
Yeah.
But where we live in central New Hampshire, the Squam Lakes Association does what we call our ridge race for crazy people who want to run 12.2 miles over the mountains, not just running 12.2 miles. Okay, fine. You want to do a half marathon, have a nice time. No, this is up the mountain, along the ridge, and down the mountain. And we charge $75 to enter that. We do get sponsors. But for us, it's sort of a race for the trails. It's a fundraiser that we do specifically for trail maintenance. We also have an AmeriCorps crew, our Lakes Region Conservation Corps, who do the vast majority of heavy lifting on that. We have volunteers that show up day of, but I do not have to sit in 2 to 4 hour long meetings with board members and committee members 3 times a week to pull that off. It's an easy event. At this point, we're going into year 10. So we kind of know what we're doing. But yeah, events as a thing for fundraising are not my favorite.
It just depends on the area. I've talked to people that love them. They do all their fundraising through events. They get the system down or whatever. I have a good friend, his wife is in England, and they do these extravagant galas, and they have tablets in the middle of these tables, and they strategically put rivals at the same table. So when one of them reaches over to give, the other person, not to be outdone, has nothing to do with the organization. It has to do with the other person at the table. They will be competing all night to see who raises the most money, and you've done nothing except for bring them together and put them with someone that they don't want to be sitting with, which I think is hilarious. But I love how easy you're just able to talk on the video. I know this is your first video, your first Zoom podcast. You did one last year, but this is your first Zoom podcast. But how did you get so good at speaking?
I have been a member of an international public speaking and leadership organization called Toastmasters International for going on 16 or so years, more than that. And I make the statement that I have yet to meet anyone in any career whose communication skills would not help them in their career. Even my friend who works for the Naval Yard and is a literal rocket scientist needs to be able to communicate with his coworkers about what he's doing and how he's calibrating the instruments that are going to go into space. So I have been doing that for a long time. I am something called a distinguished Toastmaster, which means I've given upwards of 100 speeches. And it's all designed to help people improve their communication skills. And there are very specific things that you work on as you sort of go through the ranks at Toastmasters. One of those speeches that you give talks about body language, how to not be super distracting with hand motions or anything that you're doing. A lot of us have little tics that we use as fillers or to distract us from giving our speech. And it's learning about what distracts an audience member. And you also do a lot of learning on how to connect with audience members. I will say that trying to give a webinar or a speech over Zoom gets really, really difficult when you have a lot of people, because there are so many people who you can't see and you don't know if your joke is landing or if they grasped the gravity of your statement. There's a lot to be said for in-person communication. And that's one of the things that Toastmasters really focuses on when we're not in the middle of a pandemic.
I've been listening to some Zig Ziglar recently, and he says, that's profound. And I'll always tell you when something is profound, because I've found that not everyone understands when I've said something profound, just to make sure it lands with the audience and they're paying attention. If you've never listened to him, if you're listening to this show and you've never listened to Zig Ziglar, you are shortchanging yourself. He is a wonderful, wonderful speaker. So energetic, uplifting. All of his jokes are phenomenal. They're not dirty. They're not crass, but you can't help but chuckle along. I love Zig Ziglar. And your speaking career has got some chops to it. I understand that you were at a fundraiser, at a convention, AFPICon, and someone didn't show up, and they asked you on a Friday if you could go ahead and jump in What happened with that?
Sure. The Association of Fundraising Professionals, AFP, it does an international conference every year. There's generally anywhere between 3,500 and 5,000 people who attend. And we were in San Antonio, Texas, last end of March in 2019. And there was somebody who was supposed to be presenting a session called Me, Myself, and I for solo shop fundraisers. Those are folks like myself, where I'm the only person who is dedicated to development in my organization, or an executive director who maybe they're the executive director and the chief fundraiser. And I was sitting having lunch with someone on that Friday. The conference was officially starting on Saturday, and we were having lunch, and she said, "You're a Toastmaster, so you're pretty good at developing speeches pretty quickly, and you are a solo shop development person. This session got canceled, and it's actually something that we really, really need, because so many people here are that solo person. They're the only person doing the fundraising, and we really need somebody to hop in and be able to do that." She said, "If I help, if I co-present with you, just because I know the person who's in charge of education here, do you want to do that?" It's like, okay, it's Friday. The presentation's not until Monday. Sure, let's do it. And we very quickly got together. I think she and I met twice for about half an hour, developed our slides, got everything going. And the one thing that I will say helped me the most, or one of the things that helped me the most in this, was having a professional headshot and a bio that were ready to go. So when she sent me the email Saturday morning and said, "You need to email the education director your headshot and bio, he will get it into the app that everyone is using for the conference and make sure that people know that this session is not canceled." So I was able to get those things off really quickly. I didn't have to worry about trying to take like a hotel room selfie for a headshot.
This has actually come up for me here recently. I put it out to the Facebook world to help me with my email signature, because I want to jazz it up a little bit, make it look a little extra professional, give it that pop. And I threw one of my not hotel selfies, but one of my selfies in there. And they were like first three things were like headshot, headshot, headshot. And I actually have a friend out here that is a photographer that's going to help me out with headshots here next week. But I was like, I really love that picture. It really captures, you know, who I am as a person. But no one cares about you as a person if they don't think you're also professional. So I'm working on that.
Yeah, in a number of other things that I do, I know how to make a website look decent occasionally. And several years ago, I traded website building skills with a professional photographer who, by the time we were done, I had about $1,000 worth of professional headshots and professional photos done for a significant discount because I helped with some website stuff. So
I just don't know if I can like keep my face from looking like all crazy when I'm supposed to be taking professional headshots. For those of you listening that have never seen me in person or talked to me live, I'm not exactly stoic with my facial expressions, if you know what I mean. I like to be pretty animated. We did our pre-interview stretches before we started this interview today, and I like to be all over the place. But I mean, video and seeing people on video is wonderful in this COVID, and it's really important with connecting with your audience. I understand there was all sorts of Facebook videos going on here recently, and you had all your AmeriCorps people doing like paddling across the water and playing with the sand or something like that. I don't remember exactly what you're saying. What was that all about?
Sure. So as soon as the shutdowns started, as soon as school was canceled, as soon as everybody here started social distancing and doing our stay-at-home orders from the governor of New Hampshire, my education director and our communications associate were just starting to put links out and links together and saying like, "Here, go do this activity. Here's a link." And as someone who has a second grader right now, all I was seeing in that first week were links to things to do. It was link after link after link, and I was going bonkers. I don't want to follow a link. I don't want to click one more thing. Just show me. Show me what you want me to see, what you want me to do. And incidentally, quick fact about links and clicks on your website, the more clicks someone has to do in order to make a donation, the less likely they are to follow through. So if your donation button is buried somewhere, if you can't just give now and it doesn't take you directly to the page where someone can type their credit card information in, fix that. They don't want to know anymore. Once they click that link, they just want to go. So I was frustrated, and I had a conversation with my education director and our Lake Conservation Corps coordinators. I said, look, I don't want links. I want to see what we're doing. Start putting out videos. And they were like, everything? Everything a video? I said, if you can do videos 5 days a week, yes. Post as many videos as you can of what's going on our Facebook page. We're going to get people to follow along at home, but there are a lot of second home owners here. There are a lot of people who live in Massachusetts, who live in Maine, Vermont, that they come here to visit. They're not here all the time. And let's post some activities of things that they can do and follow along from where they are. One of the earlier videos that we did was about an invasive species that we have here called bittersweet, which is a root that sort of wraps itself around trees. It's a little bit like kudzu in the South, but it just chokes off everything else around it. And our member did underwater basket weaving with bittersweet. So he showed how you go cut the bittersweet, how you take it down in a way that doesn't damage the trees around it, that doesn't damage anything else. You put it in a warm water bath, and how you weave the bittersweet. Adorable to watch this 20-something-year-old guy who's 6'4" trying to wrestle with this bittersweet as he's trying to get it all to form a basket. It was incredible. And there's no way that a link would have conveyed any part of that in the same way that doing this live video did. Mm-hmm. So we have a series of videos. We play Duck, Duck, Goose in our office. It's a different version than most people know. Our office is right on a cove, and every spring at noontime, every day, we have our members go out and count the ducks and the geese in the cove. And they track what geese and what ducks are there. At this point, now we're tracking 8 goslings. We have some Canada geese that have nested nearby. And one of our members did a video that was absolutely no words on her part. She just put the camera on and got in a kayak and paddled around the cove. She went to see some of our duck boxes. She went to a spot where there's a little trickling stream. There are geese honking overhead. And it was probably a 10-minute video of just really calm, chill spring sounds that we posted on our Facebook page. And a few days later, we got a message from the town of Worcester, Massachusetts, looking for permission to put that on their public access channel because all of their senior centers are closed down because of COVID, and they're looking for things that they can watch or participate in. And so, of course, we gave them permission, and we've worked with them to try and get the videos in a format that they can start playing them.
That's really cool. Actually, one of my previous guests, Amanda Mahaffey, is from there, which is just nuts. You guys are right in the same neck of the woods. That's crazy.
It's really fun to be connected to so many people like that. But it's one of these examples that by thinking outside the box a little bit, by us not completely shutting down all of our in-person programming, we've been able to reach even more people who never would have heard of SQUAM, never would have heard of the SLA. And we've also been putting out more information about these videos in our regular emailing. So we email about 2,000 people 3 times a week at this point through our constant contacts. And we've actually gained new members, people who have never joined with us before. They've never given us a penny. And now they're putting in and they're paying for a membership. And because we're putting things out that are as useful for them now. So I don't ever see us going back to a time when we're not doing things like that.
See, so I've talked to so many nonprofit founders, executive directors, and they are just terrified of this thing called video. You don't have to do the Facebook Live. You can, and the more you do it, the easier it gets. But actually, it is recording a video and uploading it directly to your page is what Angie's talking about, and the connection is just fantastic. But tell me about this membership thing. I don't think we've mentioned this before. What is, if someone's a member, what does that mean they get?
So if you think about a lot of museums or zoos, for instance, when you pay a membership and you get free access to that place, or you get access to so many people. We have a local natural science center nearby. I pay for a 4-person family membership. So any time of the year that those trails are open, May to October, I walk in, I show my membership card, and I can take up to 3 other people with me along the trails. The Squam Lakes Association is similar in that if you are a member, and memberships start at $35 for an individual and go all the way up to $5,000 for a family who wants to then bestow memberships on other families. Mm-hmm. It's one of our ways of bringing in income that's not fee for service. So it's kind of an appeal, but the membership gets you something. Squam is a very exclusive lake, meaning if you're going to purchase a home here, you're going to be spending upwards of $1 million, and your taxes are probably going to be $25,000 to $35,000 a year. And that's for a summer cottage. Probably not winterized, probably not heated. You can only use it for maybe 4 to 5 months out of the year comfortably. That's inaccessible to a lot of people. And so one of the Squam Lakes Association's biggest goals is accessibility for everyone else. So our office is right on the cove. We have a boat launch. And when you're a member, you get free, unlimited access to the boat launch, and you get to park at our office for free. It's a great way to encourage access. We also own 2 islands, and we have 13 campsites across those 2 islands, and we also manage another wilderness area. Anyone who's a member gets access to our camping lottery that happens in January, and you don't have access to the camping lottery unless you're a member. You also get a little bit of a discount on camping when you're a member. Also, for our family memberships, they get 10% discount on our summer camps. So you get a lot of things by being a member, but there's also a little bit of a something here. I'm trying to come up with the word that you prestige. Get because, yeah, it's a little bit of a prestige. It's not, I don't know that prestige is the right word, but pretty much anyone who owns property on the lake is expected to be a member, even at that $35 level. But occasionally we do stumble with it because we know these folks have $1 million houses. They're paying thousands and thousands in taxes. And I'm like, you're a $100 member? Really? So...
Wow, going for the pride right there, the pride.
I don't have conversations with them quite like that, but I do have conversations with them on occasion to say, yes, I know you gave $100 for your membership. What are you doing for the annual appeal?
Oh, that's one way to do it. If you're looking to get in the nonprofit game, and you've got a business, but you don't really want to go full nonprofit, what would you recommend that someone listening to the show, what should they do?
So I hear a lot of people in a lot of places say, I really want to start a nonprofit because I want to give back to a particular group, or I have this business idea, I think I could make it a nonprofit, but it has some sort of element of producing something or something like that. And nonprofit is a way of incorporating a business that requires you to have board members and essentially give up control. So if you're looking to found an organization, but you want control and you don't want board members or an executive director to ever have the ability to tell you that they don't like the direction you're going in, or you don't want to ever be fired as a founder, then you should really look hard at incorporating your business as a B Corp. It's a way of founding a business that's not a nonprofit, but it is still a way to give back and be able to give profits back to the communities. A really great B Corp to look at is Stonyfield Yogurt. That was started by a guy who refers to himself and his wife as hippies from a long time ago, that they started making their organic yogurt and grew it into a multi-million dollar company. And they've stayed a B Corp and they're always giving back. Anytime there's an event anywhere, you can call and have the Stonyfield yogurt truck come. Folks will hand out yogurt. They will sponsor folks to be participants in races. It's just a way of incorporating a business where you don't end up giving up control, which a lot of nonprofit founders struggle with when board members want to take things in a different direction, or you hire an executive director who sees the vision differently.
So you want to be a B Corp to be in control.
There you go. Be in control as a B Corp.
So you can get fired as a founder of a nonprofit?
It is possible to be fired as a founder, because once you have founded your nonprofit, you have a board. You have to decide pretty early on if you're going to be a board member as the founder and hire an executive director, or if you are going to work in programs, or if you're going to be the executive director somehow in there. There is a nonprofit that I am aware of that celebrated their 25th anniversary, and they had two founders working for them. One was the director of programs, one was a volunteer coordinator, and they ended up walking into the office one morning and the executive director sat them down separately within about 15 minutes of each other and fired them both. It's not recommended.
If you're an executive director or board member listening to this, don't just up and fire the founder.
Yeah, I think that there were some conflicts going on, but I don't know that firing the founders was the right solution for those conflicts. And if you recall, I said something about if you're going to be in fundraising, you want to be sort of central to your community. You want to be really, really connected. And these two founders are absolutely beloved by their entire communities. And it was really hard to watch. There's a new executive director for that organization now. It's been about 2 years or so since they fired the founders. The new executive director and I were talking, the amount of fundraising that was lost, the amount of revenue lost because people backed those founders, they weren't backing the exec director, was incredible. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars because the founders were fired and were not given an option or an opportunity to have any sort of exit strategy. I don't know if either one of them would have willingly left had the executive director done things differently, but the community truly felt robbed of having a celebration for these two people because of all they had done, the way that they had grown the organization over 25 years from a little tiny itty bitty organization that didn't own property, that started in a garage, like so many of them do, to a place that owned a sizable piece of property with a lot of buildings on it that was worth $1 million or more. And that they had done that through all of their hard work. The community was devastated that they didn't have a chance to honor the founders for all of the work that they had done. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my piece of advice, don't fire the founders. But if you are a founder, founder's syndrome is a thing, and you have to look really hard about giving up control and what that means. You have to be prepared to give up your vision of what your organization looks like. And I will say that one of the founders that was fired had done that 15 years ago. She had a vision of where she thought the organization was going, and the board took it in a different way. And she shrugged and she said, okay, if that's where everybody wants this to go, I'm on board. Let's go.
Yeah, sounds pretty like a pretty agreeable person. If you had one piece of advice to someone right now that was considering starting their own nonprofit, what would you tell them?
I would say look really hard at what already exists in your area for that population that you are trying to serve. I can't tell you how often I talk to people who say, there's a fire in my belly. I have to start this. And I say, really? Do you really have to? Or is there another organization that you can put your effort behind and support? If you're starting a nonprofit, there's very little chance that you are going to be making a reasonable salary doing it within the first 2 years. There's a lot of fundraising. You have to find board members. Most states won't allow you to have board members who are family and related. So you can't just say, hey, mom, dad, brother, I need you to be my board. Yeah. It's my business. I'm going to do it anyway, though. You have to go into the community. You have to find and prove a need for what you're doing. I have a friend of mine who had that fire in her belly. She was like, I've got to do this. She had a cause that had impacted her family. She put on a really great gala. She put on a great event and she kept coming to me and saying, I really want to raise money for this. And I said, great. How about you raise money for this other organization in our state that's already focused on this? She said, all right. So she did this great gala, raised over $20,000 for this other organization. They love her. Obviously, she did all the work, handed them a check for $20,000. They were happy to honor her. She's got her name in newsletters, all of this, name and photo. And she comes back to me a year later. She's like, okay, I did it that time. I'm going to start my own nonprofit now. And after quizzing her for a little bit, I said, why don't you just try this event one more time? Because this is what you're going to focus your nonprofit on, is this one event. Events, I will say it again, are not the biggest fundraisers and money makers, and they're not the thing that you should be the cornerstone of your fundraising plan. So she did the event again, and it only raised 12,000. People were a little less excited and a little less enthusiastic the second time around. So now she's really glad she didn't attempt to start her own nonprofit. She still has her full-time job. And what she's decided to do is try and do this event maybe every other year or so to keep people engaged, keep people thinking about the family member that was impacted by this, and to not start her own nonprofit.
Well, that's a great story. And that's something that comes up a lot on this show. Angie, this has been a blast. Love talking to you. I'm glad you hopped on today. Where can people get a hold of you? Where do you want them to say, this is where I want to meet Angie? Click here. Where is that place?
Probably the best place right now is to go to the Squam Lakes Association page and find me there. You can find my email address, afrancesco@squamlakes.org. And you can connect with me on Facebook. I am terrible about checking my messages from people I don't have connections with. So I try really hard to do that a couple of times a month. So if it's been a long time and you haven't heard from me, find my email address on the Squam Lakes Association page and we can go from there. You can just nudge me and say, hey, I sent you a Facebook message where I poured my heart out to you. And it's been 3 weeks. I will go check.
Thanks again, Angie. This has been wonderful.
This has been a blast. Thanks, Travis, for convincing me that today was a good day to do this.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.